Last week was a bad week for South Africa. Just when we thought we had a vaccine and there was light at the end of the tunnel after a year of grinding pandemic, the news broke that the AstraZeneca vaccine, of which we had secured 1.5 million doses, did not offer protection against the new SA variant of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. It was a real body blow. The vaccine rollout, which would have seen the country's healthcare workers inoculated en masse, was immediately halted. I spoke to Stavros Nicolaou, chair of Business for South Africa's health working group, and I asked him what the halt to the rollout meant for South Africa's strategy to end the coronavirus pandemic. Stavros, how are you?
Under the cosh, I think.
Yeah, today. Sure. Today especially, of all days.
You know, one of my editors said to me this morning, but this is how vaccines work, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of trial and development, a lot of trial and error, and maybe... Sure. What we need to do is actually be calm and reasoned about this and talk about what lies ahead.
I don't think it's all doom and gloom today.
No.
There are a number of silver linings. I mean, I'd hate to be in a position that we were 6 weeks down the track of vaccinating.
Yeah.
Done, you know, yeah. Suboptimal. And
yeah.
Healthcare workers got infected. And all. So there are some positives to this. It's not an absolute train smash.
Yeah.
It's a temporary setback.
You know, everybody is sort of focused on the AstraZeneca vaccine. That's where all the pressure has been. And
yeah,
it's interesting to me that in the last 24 hours, how much J&J's name is suddenly, boom, out there.
I'm not surprised. I mean, when I saw the initial AstraZeneca data,
yeah,
because I didn't have a sense of their study design, right? I only got the sense... when they announced their data.
Sure.
It was rather light on a number of important parameters for this country. So I'm not saying it's a bad vaccine, because you might still find that it demonstrates efficacy for the severe to critical segment of the population, because it doesn't demonstrate efficacy for mild to moderate, right? You don't know with this, you can't say with certainty, but I think the J&J study design gave us a lot more of the South African parameters than we needed.
Where does this leave us now with the news yesterday that the AstraZeneca vaccine, I see the protection is as low as 10%, efficacy as low as 10%.
So, Paul, I think it is a temporary but not permanent setback.
Yeah.
And there are some silver linings here. So let me go through them.
Yeah.
And let me also say why it's a temporary setback.
Yeah.
So firstly, I'd rather we find out now before we started vaccinating than go through 4 weeks of vaccination, have doctors or nurses in an ICU thinking they've got a level of protection that they don't have.
Sure.
So that's even more disastrous. So I'm not saying we would have released the product, but there's a possibility we might have.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing that's immensely positive for me is that if the setback happened 3 weeks ago, before the J&J results came out, J&J's only been out 9 days ago.
Yeah.
The phase 3 studies. And now we know that the only product that we know right now that has in vivo efficacy against the dominant South African variant is actually J&J.
Wow.
There are in vitro studies that demonstrate efficacy, desired levels of efficacy.
Yeah.
Against the South African dominant variant with Pfizer and Novavax. But we don't have a clear picture in vivo as yet.
Right.
So I'm not saying they won't work, but this news would have been tragic 2 weeks ago before the J&J data came out.
Yeah.
What it does at least give us an option is we've got J&J in reserve.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why is it a temporary setback? It's temporary because there's a timing issue here. We were intent as a country in vaccinating 750,000 healthcare workers. That would have been the 1.5 million doses. That would have covered your healthcare workers in phase 1A.
Yeah.
And phase 1A covers those healthcare workers that are either direct patient facing and or are ventilating or have an aerosolization exposure, like if you're working in an ICU ward.
Right, right.
Okay, so we would have covered the majority of those with the, you know, the 1.5 million or 750,000 lives with AstraZeneca. So the temporary setback is that it has created a gap now.
Okay.
So the gap can partly be filled by redirecting Johnson & Johnson product from elsewhere in the world, because there is some product available, because J&J produce, you know, they produce this for clinical trial purposes.
Okay.
And this is what government have put out there.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, that they can make an initial 300,000 available and then further a further quantum after that. So if you convert everything into lives, if you were targeting 750 odd thousand lives, healthcare worker lives,
yeah,
you'll be able to bridge 300,000 of those, which is about 40 odd percent.
Yeah.
And then our understanding from government as well is that there's a further small quantum from J&J that will also be redirected after the initial 300,000.
Okay. Any idea what level, how much that is?
Around 150,000.
Oh, sorry, 150,000. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's okay. Not bad.
So it's not a complete train smash.
Hmm.
And I would rather be in this position where we are today than having started 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Vaccinated, a few doctors get critically ill, don't survive, and you also didn't have the J&J option. Imagine being in that position.
It would be catastrophic. I think that is the right word for it.
Yeah, correct. So yes, temporary setback. There are some plans. Now, the further plans are the following. That the Pfizer 20 million doses,
yeah,
which is 10 million lives,
yeah,
is still on the table.
Okay. Right.
Okay. Hasn't been concluded, though, and it's an option. And I guess government are going to look closely at the in vitro performance of Pfizer with the South African dominant variant.
Before we go any further, this the Pfizer vaccine. So, you know, we hear over and over that it has to be stored at minus 70 degrees centigrade. And yet I've also heard that it can sort of survive maybe 5 days out of that temperature in order for distribution to occur. One of the stumbling blocks seems to have been that we don't have those cold storage facilities. What's your view on that? I mean, is it as critical as some of the media made it out to be?
So look, we have got some cold chain capability at the levels that are required for Pfizer. Okay.
Okay.
So it's not like you're going to receive all 20 million doses at once.
Sure.
It's going to be spread out over a period of time. And my understanding from our supply chain colleagues is that the country can accommodate that volume over a phased period.
Right.
With existing capacity.
Right.
Cold chain capacity, that is. Of course, what complicates Pfizer is if you start going beyond 5 days and all of that, it does add an extra level of complexity.
Yeah.
So I think the point to be made here is you're going to have to be targeted with the Pfizer product.
Okay,
it's probably going to be accommodated in your more developed parts of the country, your metropolitan areas rather than rural areas.
Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely. Can we talk briefly about, you know, the whole nature of testing and developing vaccines? Earlier, I was talking about trial and error. I mean, this is par for the course for vaccine development. Am I right?
You're quite right. As it is for pharmaceuticals, I mean, you get a preclinical phase, which is very much a proof of concept phase. And once you are demonstrating proof of concept, you then move to phase one, phase two, and then ultimately the much bigger phase three. And there's even a phase four, which is a post-launch phase.
All right.
Which is also called, it's also called market surveillance. And that's where you do surveillance on ongoing efficacy and safety of the product, whether it's a pharmaceutical or a vaccine, either one. So there's ongoing surveillance that takes place, and that's what we call post-marketing surveillance. Because it happens once the product's in the market, you're still required to continue surveilling it. So it is very much a systematic approach to get to a much bigger phase three, and a phase three looks at safety and efficacy on a much broader population.
Right.
And these studies are usually, you know, they're randomized, double blind, multi-center studies. And they do that to give you that cross-section analysis of patients.
Yeah.
So in the J&J is a great example, because their phase three study was just over 45,000 if you want, patients. It involved multiple centers, including an arm here in South Africa. The South African arm was 6,300 patients, and it covered young and old patients. It covered the patients with HIV and without. Of course, the HIV factor is a significant factor in our country. You've got to understand how the immune response of these things behaves relative to an immunocompromised patient, who's one who's HIV positive. So those were the parameters. They also looked at elderly patients, patients that had comorbidity. So you've got to do these studies on a much larger scale in phase three. And it's really the phase three studies that count, and the ones that you use to file for registration with the drug regulatory agencies.
So there was a story in Salon talking about the J&J vaccine being 66% effective compared to Moderna's 90%. And the comment they make is, how much does vaccine efficacy matter?
There are two different parameters here. There's efficacy and efficiency. I'm going to draw the analogy with a flu vaccine. So when you take a flu vaccine every season, the efficacy of flu vaccines is in a range of 40 to 60%.
Yeah.
So what you're trying to prevent here, and that's why the most important thing to look at with any vaccine is, well, let's just stick to COVID, is what are the levels of hospitalization, what are the levels of prevention of severe disease, and what are the levels of prevention of mortality and death, right? And the J&J findings are very good in that respect with the South African dominant variant.
Yes.
And that's why, even though it only demonstrates the 57% efficacy,
yeah,
there was a very high efficiency with respect to the hospitalization severe disease.
Right.
So what that means is that you will get patients that will not be hospitalized, will get infected, because you still get infected if you take a vaccine. It's just how effective is the immune response. So these patients will get it, and they'll get sniffles, or they'll get body pain. But they're not going to be driven into being hospitalized and develop severe disease and or death.
Right.
And that's the important thing to look at. The J&J results are very satisfactory from that point of view, because it covers SA variant and significant diminution of hospitalization, severe disease, and death, which is really what you want.
Amazing.
And that's why I take a flu vaccine. It's not that I'm not going to get symptoms.
Yeah.
I'll just get a much milder form of flu.
Sure.
And it's going to keep me out of hospital, because that's the problem. When you get hospitalized and there's a flu epidemic, and you can't get to ICU and you die.
Yeah. Are you getting to sleep at all? Are you getting any kind of rest time, or is it just, are you in a kind of another level now?
No, look, I'm in another level, but
as are many, many other people in the country. And
yeah.
I think what you got to recognize is this situation presents itself every century. hopefully, we're not in the next century when it comes, the next one comes around. But, you know, it does come around once in a century. You can either sit back and do nothing and, you know, take body blow after body blow. Or you can say, well, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Grasp the nickel and make a difference. I saw in a doctor's chat group last night, one of the doctors posed, the virus is in charge. If it was in charge, there'd be no one left on this planet. So it's very far from being in charge.
Yeah.
The virus wants no one left on today because it will eventually kill itself. That's what it wants. It's like it's Latin. This virus is it Latin. You know, compare where the Spanish flu was after 14 months now compared to where COVID is today.
Yeah.
We've done a lot better, sure. We've got a lot more modern technology to deal with, but we have done it better. So I don't think the virus is in charge. The virus is testing us.
So there you have it. Some straight talk from Stavros Nicolaou, Chair of Business for South Africa's Health Working Group. The virus is a glutton, and it's testing us. But we will get through this. There are other vaccines on the way, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. You've been listening to Paul Ashe, Senior Reporter, Sunday Times.